Zeus! Apollo! At your post, lads!
Hello, and welcome to the inaugural episode of The Lads on Magnum. I am your Apollo, Steve Skelton. I am here with your Zeus, Todd Robert Anderson.
Hi, everybody. I'm Zeus.
And yeah, this is a brand new podcast for Previously TV, all about Magnum P.I.
The best show ever.
And certainly the biggest private investigator show of the 80s.
They don't make private investigator shows
Nobody
anymore.
Does. Well, they're going to.
Well, they're going to bring Magnum
they're
back.
They're going
yeah.
to. And they're
yeah.
definitely going to.
Yeah, well, maybe that'll kick off a whole new slew of PI
of
shows.
New PIs for the 21st century.
Yeah.
Where they're just like searching Facebook.
Yeah, they just sit at a computer surfing the web. It's not very interesting.
It's not going to be. There won't be Ferraris and 45 caliber handguns.
No, it won't. In the state of Hawaii.
So yeah, this is, we're going to go episode by episode, breaking down Magnum and the wonderfulness that is Magnum. We're starting with part one of the pilot episode entitled, Please Don't Eat the Snow in Hawaii.
I still don't quite understand. It's because of the cocaine.
It's a cocaine reference, Todd.
But when they say don't eat the snow, you know, in places where it actually snows, it's because it's like a dog peeing.
No, they say don't eat the yellow snow.
Oh, okay.
You shouldn't eat yellow cocaine either. But it's a cocaine reference.
It's weird, though. You think that it makes me feel like someone
it's
peed
a little,
on the cocaine.
Yeah, I know. But you don't pee on the cocaine. This first episode of Magnum, it aired in two parts on the same night, but we're going to do two separate episodes for part one and part two.
Right.
December 11th, 1980 is the premiere of this. So, according to the DVD synopsis, in this episode, part one, Magnum P.I., Hawaii-based private investigator Thomas Magnum heads to the airport to pick up an old naval comrade, Lieutenant Dan Cook, and becomes suspicious when his friend doesn't show up. When Dan later turns up dead of an apparent cocaine smuggling gone bad, Magnum is adamant about his friend's innocence. He suspects Dan's death may have something to do with the top secret assignment he had been working on and vows to uncover the truth.
It's so dramatic sounding. Nice read.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well done.
So yeah, so let's get into this first episode.
Well, firstly, it opens. The very first thing you see is Magnum P.I. swimming.
Yes.
He gets out of the water.
Shirtless.
He's shirtless. He gets out of the water. There are droplets of water glistening on his chest hair and dripping down his face.
Yeah.
And he is...
Well, it's you start with the beefcake. The show starts with the beefcake.
Yeah, they're not even messing around.
Because he's also got the tiny swim trunks on.
Yeah, and he's dragging a bag.
Uh-huh.
What's in that bag?
Who knows?
At first I thought, is that some kind of crazy workout thing? You swim with like a bag of rocks?
That sounds extremely dangerous. I do not recommend anyone swim with a bag of rocks.
And then it appears at first that he's going to be breaking in to a place.
It looks like, yeah, it looks like he's sneaking in and he's a criminal. And you're like, what's going on?
Yeah.
This is already the greatest show on television.
He's wet and shirtless and he's some kind of crook.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the first spoken lines of the show are a voiceover, Magnum voiceover.
Oh, which is, he'll later call his little voice, but he doesn't call that narration his little voice in the pilot.
No, it's not mentioned. It's just used as kind of like a noirish mechanism.
And it sounds like it was recorded in a cave.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird.
Or we're recording this podcast right now.
Right, cave. Or like a big airplane hangar or something. It just sounds.
Yeah, I think
really
you can
weird.
Hear like boarding calls in.
it's recorded in an active airport.
But it's the very first spoken words of Magnum P.I. are, it's funny the things a grown man will do for a living.
And that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
There's so much wisdom in each segment of a Magnum episode.
It really is. There's so many chestnuts.
Life lessons.
So he's breaking in and picking a lock, and there's a sign that says guard dogs on duty.
Mm-hmm. Who could those dogs be?
And that's where we cut, and we see Higgins for the first time on the balcony overseeing his domain.
Important note, though, in the narration, he talks about Robin Masters. Yes. And then it pans up and you see Higgins on the balcony and he says, no, that's not Robin Masters, which, you know, is the source of debate for the rest of the series.
Which we'll get to, I'm sure. Yeah, as the series moves on.
Yeah.
Higgins, and then he calls the dogs Apollo and Zeus to their posts, as you heard from the soundbite from the very beginning of our show. And the dogs come a-running.
They do.
The Dobermans.
But that's because Magnum put a squealy sound machine on the beach.
Yeah, which I think is the technical term.
Squealy sound machine. Yeah, high-pitched squealy sound machine.
I think that was also like a new wave band from the early 80s.
What he was doing. He was playing...
Squealy sound machine.
Yeah, he was playing the band. The dogs were attracted to it.
They're alive in Japan.
So he could steal the Ferrari. That's what he's doing.
Right.
He's breaking.
Well, he says his narration continues, and he says he's been in exchange for being able to live rent free on this Robin Masters estate, who's this big famous author, rich author who was never at this estate, but always has guests coming and going, and apparently they're always blonde stewardesses. Because that's who's currently staying there.
Flight attendants,
yeah. But, well, in the early 80s, they were stewardesses. He calls them stewardesses. It's all the datedness of the time. But in exchange for living there rent-free, he lends his expertise in security and testing the security of the Robin Masters estate to make sure everything is secure and his guests are safe.
Right. And Higgins does not care for it.
Higgins does not care for Magnum at all.
He does not want
him
there.
It's clear from the get-go.
The two flight attendants are very flirty with Magnum because Higgins installed that alarm system in the Ferrari.
Yeah, but you're skipping ahead of the first Vietnam flashback, my friend.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Oh no! That's critical. That's actually the Vietnam. This is actually what kind of makes Magnum not joking, like great.
Right.
Is the core of his character is actually based in something very real, outside of kind of the flashy, almost goofiness of a lot of the show.
It's a very interesting juxtaposition.
Yeah. And
because this is a show about a PI with PTSD.
Yeah.
But he's very jovial and easygoing.
Like Rick and TC, his friends, who are also from the same unit. And but the core of his character, there's a very serious element that he was shaped by his experiences, and he's jovial in the sense that he doesn't like to relive those memories.
Right.
It's a very realistic portrayal of in this segment of an early 80s TV show. It almost feels like, you know, as we were getting into the 80s, things were getting more bombastic and more superficial. You know, you're looking at like an A-Team, Knight Rider, you know, big fun stuff. But, you know, you look at shows from the 70s, the characters, even like this, you're looking like your Rockford Files or your Quincy, similar types of shows, and then even a lot of the comedies, like like Jefferson's, All in the Family. There were some serious, realistic cores to all of the characters that were relevant, to the time, and it seems like Magnum is kind of taking that a little bit of that. Into the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, it starts in 1980, so reasonably the thing
it's still
was,
the influence
was being
is still
developed
there.
In
79.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but it's as he's, after he is on his way to steal the Ferrari. He has a Vietnam flashback, and we also see he's got a very distinctive signet ring that is will be significant.
Is that a naval
cross?
It's a
unit ring. I think it's a naval. I don't think it's a unit. I don't know if it's a unit cross or a naval cross, but it's a related to that.
Yeah.
And that's what jumps us to the first Vietnam flashback, where we see TC for the first time.
Right.
Flying the chopper, and I think, is Rick in the chopper too? Because he's the gunner, or is he the gunner in the chopper?
Yeah, he's the gunner in the chopper.
And there's snippets of battles, because
Although I don't know,
on the ground with his unit.
Do we see TC in that very first one? Okay.
Yeah. But I don't think we see Rick. We don't see Rick till later. TC's in it.
TC is in it? Because, okay, I just didn't notice.
We can fight!
No. It's just, I have a memory of the first time we see him, he's flying a chopper. Right?
He is. But it's in Vietnam.
But that doesn't happen in that very first flashback, I don't think. I don't think we see him in the chopper.
No, we do.
Later.
We do.
Oh, okay.
I mean, according to my notes. I mean, I was really drunk.
Oh, granted. But, well, and I may have been looking down, writing in all caps.
Yeah.
Robert Loggia.
Yeah.
When we saw him, I don't know.
But there is another flashback later that is a TC modern chopper, TC Vietnam chopper.
You might
be thinking of that.
Yeah.
But because this one, I think it's just a quick one. It's just a quick to establish
fast.
That he's a veteran. He was in Vietnam. He was involved in combat in Vietnam, and there's something to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he turns on the tape recorder to lure the lads away so he can go steal the Ferrari.
Right, and then he gets in the Ferrari.
Yeah, and he steals it, and he does that. You know, he's trying to break into the Ferrari, and the dogs are coming, and he does that. You know, work the lock. Don't look at the dogs. I looked at the dogs.
he does that a couple times. He does that later in the second.
Yeah,
half
there'll
of
be
it.
A callback to it later. and then he pops in the car and figures out the code to steal the car.
And the girls, the flight attendants, are trying to help him.
Yeah, they're trying to help pull
and
the dogs away.
With him
yeah, because they're so flirty. Well, if it's Magnum, I mean, what are you gonna do but flirt?
But he's got to pick up his friend who's flying in from Tokyo,
yeah.
So he can't hang out with this male pornographic fantasy.
Right, exactly.
That's how dedicated he is to his friend.
That's a good friend.
Yeah, it's a really good friend.
Because you would have been left at the airport. You would be confused and wondering where I was.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so he drives the Ferrari.
Yeah, so he speeds
away.
Off.
Gets it through the gate before the gate closed.
Right.
The dogs are chasing after
it.
And there's that moment where one of the dogs gets jammed
in the gate.
And that upset me.
It was alarming.
It upset me. I didn't.
Almost killed a dog.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very worried about that.
Really? Because we don't know they might have killed a dog. We don't know if it's the same dog in the later scenes.
Yeah, how do we know?
They could have just ordered up another Doberman.
Yeah, probably. Bastards.
You could do that in the 80s.
Yeah, you can get away with a lot more dog cruelty.
Yeah, so then after the dog cruelty, he speeds off and onto the freeway with the Ferrari, and then the opening credit sequence starts, and it's very alarming.
Because it's not
the Magnum theme song we all know and love. It's not the Mike Post.
No, it's not the Mike Post
theme.
Magic. No.
It's this weird soft jazz theme song with like a plinky piano solo.
It sounds like a 1970s nighttime soap theme song. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It does not fit. It's not right for Magnum.
So
it was weird. I
didn't like it.
I don't like it either. And I totally forgot that was how it started. And I bet that I saw a lot of these episodes in reruns and they put the regular one.
Oh, yeah, the regular opening.
They didn't,
yeah.
But they didn't.
Yeah,
do that
no, I'm sure subsequently. Yeah. They,
yeah.
That's...
But I mean, honestly, it's the theme song that we know and love that would get me from the beginning to the end of the worst Magnum episodes because it was enough.
Yeah.
The
and
opening
this
credits
is
and the ending
not
credits.
Enough.
No, this is not enough. It's not enough. Luckily, this is a very good episode, a pilot.
Yeah. So Magnum arrives at the airport, and he's going to be picking up his friend, Lieutenant Dan, who I just started calling Lieutenant Dan, is a Forrest Gump reference. but it's, you know, in his voice, I think it's the voiceover, he reveals it that Dan is part of Naval Intelligence, mm-hmm. and Magnum is former Navy, too. We saw from the flashback, he's been retired about a year. Now, what's interesting about that is Magnum's retired Navy, yet he's involved in, like, ground small unit combat.
Mm-hmm.
Which is unusual, which makes it seem, you know, we find out, you know, later, but he's kind of involved in, you know, special operations. He's a very, I can't remember, is it established in, I don't think it's even established exactly what he's doing, if he's a Navy SEAL or if he's, so I'm also trying to think of, like, when did the SEALs actually form? Was it around the time of Vietnam? But, you know, we have to look that up.
And yeah,
look
I'm it back not sure.
But he's not just a regular sailor. He's involved in some unusual stuff.
Yes.
Which also kind of lends weight to his PTSD and all of the experiences that have kind of shaped him. So,
right.
But as we find out, Lieutenant Dan arrives at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And he's subject...
Has no problem getting through customs and security.
Yeah, he's subject to the rigorous naval security check, as we hear in this clip.
This briefcase, your only luggage, Lieutenant?
That's it.
You have a release for these?
They're photocopies.
But of what, Lieutenant? I don't read Japanese. I guess it's okay.
He shifts so quickly.
Yeah.
I don't read Japanese.
So I don't, I guess it's okay. So I don't care what this is.
You go ahead.
It is. Yeah.
It's a different time.
But now, but then on his way out, though, Dan is intercepted by a couple of sailors.
Right.
Who claim that he's wanted, the captain wants him elsewhere, and they cart him off and, like, beat the hell out of him.
Yeah, they beat the crap out of him in an alleyway.
Yeah, and leave him to bleed, and take off. And as Magnum arrives to pick him up at the airport,
Magnum going past the security guard that he refers to as Ski. although when I first saw him, I went, "Oh, hey, it's Mac," and I was like, "Oh no, that can't be Mac." Later seasons,
yeah.
He's a twin brother.
Yeah. But we also see in this scene when Lieutenant Dan is left beaten in the alley, he's wearing the same ring as Magnum.
Right.
Which is important.
That is important. Very important. Mac, by the way, is played by Jeff Mackey.
Oh.
And fun fact is he was cousins with Robert Redford.
Oh, really?
And Robert Redford got him interested in acting.
That is a fun fact.
Thanks, Bob.
I mean, he didn't cast me in anything you were ever in, but, you know, whatever.
Just give it time. Not Robert Redford. I don't think he cast him in anything. He just got him interested in acting, which really isn't a favor to anyone.
No, that's actually, you're kind of being mean. Especially if you're Robert Redford.
Yeah, like I'm going to be Robert Redford?
Yeah, sure. You could be as successful as me, Robert Redford. What a jerk.
Fuck you, Redford.
So now we find that Lieutenant Dan has died.
Yeah.
And he's in a naval medical examiner's office,
mm-hmm.
when the captain shows up.
Mm-hmm.
A captain who makes it very clear immediately that he hates hippies.
Oh, he hates everybody.
Like, just almost like unsolicited.
Yeah, he doesn't like other people in the Navy. He doesn't like anybody. This is Fritz Weaver we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
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 So, fun fact about
Captain Cooley.
Captain Cooley. Yeah. Fun fact about Fritz Weaver is he is Jeffrey Combs' nemesis in the movie Reanimator.
That's right.
And I, as soon as he appeared on screen, I was like, holy shit, it's Reanimator guy. And then he walks right into a morgue. So I guess Fritz Weaver only works around morgues.
That was in his contract. So what we find here is that Lieutenant Dan died of a cocaine overdose from burst smuggling packets found in his stomach, which is crazy. The captain goes ape shit and he wants to file all these papers saying Lieutenant Dan was a drug smuggler and he doesn't, you know, he gets his, he's dishonored the Navy and he loses his buckets over that. Then we get Magnum back to the estate. He's confused. He couldn't find Lieutenant Dan, and he runs into the bikini blondes again. And and I don't know if they were Swedish or Norwegian. Their accent is weird.
I don't know. I feel maybe they were supposed to be French.
I don't know.
Because that's the male pornographic. Yeah, it totally is a French stewardess.
Yeah. So, and they accost him, like, both of them together in bikinis, aggressively accosting him because they're going to go swimming in, like, the tide pool or whatever the hell is on the estate. Well, that's down from that. And, you know, they're wondering if Magnum wants to go with them. And this is that exchange.
Yeah, why don't you join us?
Oh, sure, great. I'll just get my trunks.
If you wish.
So that's like the extended threesome invitation jazz? Or...
That for the listener, because you know, the saxophone, actually right after that dialogue, it just cuts to a hardcore pornographic threesome. And that's the music.
Well, no,
plays.
but then it's like during that music, then Magnum wistfully watches after them, and we see them like running down into the pool, which I think they're topless by that point, because I think they're bikini tops, but it's their back, so it's like TV topless. But they still have the dogs with them.
Yeah.
So were they inviting Magnum into a swimming pool threesome that the dogs were going to watch, or?
Well, they were going to keep guard. To make sure there were no interlopers. You don't want someone messing up your threesome down in the...
After that, Magnum gets a phone call or he makes a call. And,
Can we talk about... Is this the weird phone bit? Where he's running up the stairs?
Yeah. Like
he's running
getting,
down?
Yeah, it's like he was invited to a threesome and he kind of declined it, but then gets on the phone and then runs and gets binoculars to spy on the girls that just invited him, like expressly invited him to naked swim time.
Yeah, and he instead makes a phone call.
Yeah.
But he keeps running up and down the stairs.
To get binoculars to look at
the
girls.
And moves the phone up and down. It's so weird.
It's a weird, like physical comedy that feels like the studio said, this pilot needs more physical comedy. And it's also like in an inappropriate spot because this is the scene where he also learns Lieutenant Dan's dead.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
And it triggers another Vietnam flashback. This is where Robert Loggia is introduced.
It's a spoonful of sugar before your Nam flashback is a crazy
phone. A spoonful
phone
of physical comedy before your Vietnam flashback.
That's a Mary Poppins song, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. So, but that's where we, in the Vietnam flashback number two, we're introduced to Robert Loggia, who's their unit commander.
Well, and I noticed him in the first flashback,
And
too.
Lieutenant Dan, was he in the first one?
Yeah.
I think it wasn't, we didn't focus on him, though, in the first
one. No,
yeah.
He like is in the foreground, and he squints and smirks.
But he's established as, I think, the leader.
Yeah, at that
in this.
Point. Yeah.
And Magnum and Lieutenant Dan are both there.
But says
and
very
all,
little.
And they're all, regrouping after a big firefight, and Magnum is wondering, where's TC? And that's the end of that flashback.
Right. Yeah, Loggia, it's one of those guest star things, you know, where he guy doesn't say very much, but he's very recognizable.
Yeah.
So you're like,
yeah.
Well, he's going to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know
it's already, let's say,
it's Loggia.
Oh, I know that guy. I wonder if he's going to be relevant to the present day storyline.
Because he's
line.
Essentially playing like a bit part in these flashbacks.
In a flashback.
And it's like, why Loggia? Why not somebody else?
That would be a great red herring to use in a show, though, to just keep that bit a red herring.
Yeah.
Because you would be like,
just see
why is John Hamm in these flashbacks? Like, and then he's just a flashback guy.
Yeah.
No relevance to the present day storyline.
Not at all.
So now Magnum goes back to the airport because he's picking up Lieutenant Dan's sister Alice, who's coming in to make arrangements for the deceased Lieutenant Dan. And they have a heart-to-heart on the rocky shores of the Hawaiian coast.
Alice Cook, played by Pamela Susan Shoup.
Yes, Shoup.
The Shoup.
And that's where Magnum is like, I'm going to find his killers.
Yeah.
That's where he makes that vow, and then he goes to confront Captain Cooley, who hates Lieutenant Dan and hates Magnum even more.
Yeah, he hates him.
And, you know,
they get a good
fight, a huge dust up, and Captain's like, but I've spent my career re-earning my stripes, blah, 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 man.
Show me the file! I don't care what's in the file!
And then that ends with Magnum yelling at him like this.
Dan Cook was murdered, and I'm gonna prove it. When I do, you can kiss those gold stripes you spent 30 years egg-sucking for. Goodbye.
Egg-sucking.
Egg-sucking. That's like the strongest language 1980s...
Egg-sucking.
...is going to allow.
Yeah, that's great. I love egg-sucking.
So, now, this is the thing. It's like, after that, Magnum hits up another old Navy buddy... Healy, Ensign Healy.
And this is the first time we see Magnum enjoying some beers with his friends.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they get together
and
for beer a couple
is
of beers.
Huge in this series. Yeah. It's gigantic.
So, they're at the marina hanging out because they're Navy guys, so boats.
Yeah, they like boats.
So Lieutenant, he's trying to get this file that Captain Cooley wouldn't give him. And Healy says, you know, oh, Cooley hated Lieutenant Dan, and he never gave him any important cases to work on, so I don't know what the big deal is. And so Magnum leaves. And as Magnum's leaving, he is being observed by a couple of guys who were the Navy guys from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Who beat up Lieutenant Dan and left him for dead, but they're in civilian clothes, they're Hawaiian shirts. And one guy's on the phone, and he's watching Magnum, and, you know, he's getting, clearly talking to a boss, and these seem to be guys that are up to no good, because they clearly are involved in killing Lieutenant Dan, so they're these assassins. So they're big bads.
Mm-hmm.
And in this moment, something really weird happens that I can't explain, because they these are the two guys that brutally beat Lieutenant Dan pretty much to death. And then as this one bad guy gets off the phone, the other bad guy walks up eating an ice cream cone like a 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got ice cream all over his face. And very tenderly, the other guy is like starts to wipe it off his face. It's like this weird moment that happens on the phone like this.
You're making a mess. Look at that.
What do you say?
Kill him.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
It's so weird.
It's like, you're making a mess. And he brushes the ice cream off this other guy's face. It's very tender and very personal. And I don't understand it. And it's never addressed again later. It's like a bit.
Yeah.
That happened that they thought was hilarious for some
like
reason.
Like an ad lib that they kept in that really doesn't pay off at all.
No, it makes no sense. And all it did was confuse me for the rest of this pilot episode.
It's like a Judd Apatow film.
But their orders are that they got on the phone was to kill Magnum. Magnum gets in his Ferrari and drives away from the marina, and the bad guys follow him onto this kind of freeway chase that has the most non-threatening and delightful music. It's, again, like upbeat light jazz freeway chase music.
It was very chipsy. There were lots of aerial shots of the Ferrari cruising down the street.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very nice.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of like Ferrari porn.
Yeah.
But it was like, but for like a car chase.
Well, and it was more like a car following for a while.
Yeah, but then it got into like a short chase, and then the music kicked up a little bit, and then an RV showed up, and it was a very confusing edit, and then suddenly the bad guy's car was tumbling off a cliff.
Yeah, it was
and
really
explodes.
Weird. It was really weird. And then right after that happens, Magnum backs up the Ferrari.
Yeah.
And that is the very first time that you can clearly see his stunt driver. whose name is John Toole.
Oh, nice.
Who was like a foot shorter than Magnum, which is why when he's backing up, you can see his face. If it was actually Tom Selleck, you would, because he couldn't see. He had to like bend down to see out the windshield because the crossbar of
the Ferrari,
like he couldn't see unless he bent over or sat up too high. So it was always fun to see Tool.
So this banger car tumbles off the cliff and then it does the classic 80s tumble, 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 sit for 2 seconds and then burst into flame for no reason.
It was a factory recall.
Yeah. And then Magnum's kind of just staring at it. And then this is how he decides to deal with this crime scene.
It'd take all night to explain to 5-0 why a couple of yo-yos with a machine gun tried to kill me.
So he just drives away. He just leaves a crime scene that was an attempted murder that ended with an exploding car. And he doesn't even check on the guys and he leaves.
No.
And we find the one guy that was on the phone, the bad guy, has survived.
Right. See him crawling up. Yeah. He's all bloody.
Yeah.
It's a bloody mess.
So this takes us back to the master's compound.
Good. I love it there.
Right. And Magnum, and this is the weird thing about, like, Magnum backs, this is, again, some more, must have been, like, studio notes about we need more physical comedy. Because it's this weird bit where Magnum returns to the compound and he's looking around for the Apollo, Zeus, dogs, Higgins. He can't find any, but doesn't know where they are. And so he backs into his cabana.
Mm-hmm.
And standing at the top, and in his cabana, his entrance leads to, his front door leads to a very small platform that has stairs down.
Yeah.
Right? So he backs into it, and standing up at the top of the stairs, literally a foot from the door, are Higgins and Apollo and Zeus. They're crammed into this tiny little, the staging is so awkward. And he's does this back in, like this comic, like French farce back in, and then, whoa, surprised by who's there, even though he literally kind of bumps into everybody as he's backing in and then notices. It's so clumsy.
It really is weird. You know, I hearing you describe his cabana, because it's a large set of stairs.
Yeah.
You know?
It appears
as if he lives in like a basement room.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
But it's not.
No, it's like he can walk outside. Must be like on the hill or something.
Yeah, it's really confusing as to where it's situated in the house. Yeah.
But he gets into fight with Higgins about his behavior and whatnot. And
Higgins puts restrictions on, he says, you can have the car. But you can't use the tennis courts or anything else without telling me first.
And then they have a little comic yell exchange, like so.
Since you obviously intend to leech off Robin Masters for the rest of your...
Now you hold it! And that goes for you too!
So it's the first time the dogs have acquiesced to Maggie.
I like the dog acting.
Yeah.
The like whimpering. Yeah. That's great.
No, I think the new dog they got to replace the one they killed was much better.
Yeah.
Much, much more range.
Well, that dog was too dumb to stop before the stupid gate
before
closed.
A gate closed on its neck. So they come to a detente of sorts, I guess. And then Magnum offers to make Higgins a drink. And this is how Higgins responds.
Don't ruin my whiskey with ice. I'm not a bloody American.
And, you know, I'm on Higgins' side.
Yeah, I mean, you can... Some cheap whiskey needs ice.
Oh, if it's a Glenlivet, like a 12 or a 10-year Glenlivet, you gotta put ice in that shit.
Yeah, you gotta put ice in it,
but, you know, if it's proper...
Yeah, but, you know, yeah. So, he makes a good point. And the irony, of course, is John Hillerman is...
Is...
Not British.
No, he's not.
He is American.
No, and you...
That's hilarious!
It is hilarious, and was jarring when I saw Up the Creek the first time. Why isn't he British?
Everything I learned about British people, I learned from John Hillerman. I feel betrayed. So, and then Higgins takes his leave, and he makes a cryptic remark that confuses Magnum. Says, "It's a pity you couldn't have been more like your sister," which is weird. And Magnum's confused. And then Magnum calls Rick at Rick's place, which is a Casablanca.
Rick's Cafe American.
Like, literally it's Casablanca. It's not even a Casablanca reference. It just is Casablanca.
But I guess that's why he's called Rick through the whole series, because he had this place called Rick's Cafe American and insisted that all his employees refer to him as Rick.
Yeah, because he doesn't want anyone to find out his real name, which is Orville. He's deathly embarrassed of anyone finding out his real name is Orville. Which is not the strongest character trait.
No, it's not.
It's just not the most believable. So, but he calls Rick's place, and we see Rick in the present for the first time. I think now we're introduced to Rick.
Yes.
And asks Rick for info on the guys who tried to kill him, because apparently Rick's Cafe American is also a hub of criminal activity. So Rick's got all of the dirt. So, which makes Rick essentially a criminal.
Yeah, he's got, he knows about the cocaine being trafficked through his club. He's a criminal.
Exactly. Yeah. So Magnum wants to set up a meeting with someone called Snow White, which is the only person on the islands who deals in large amounts of cocaine. Mm-hmm. And then they make a Casablanca reference before hanging up.
All the cheap gin joints in the world.
Why did you have to go and pick mine, sweetheart?
That is a terrible reference.
Yeah, and I like, but I like
on the nose.
I like Selleck's line reading.
Yeah,
he's because he says it like it's Rick that keeps insisting that's how they end their phone conversations every time.
Right,
and he's just sick of it. I hate saying this. It's stupid.
Sweetheart,
and I'm hanging up.
Yeah, yeah. The nuance of Selleck.
And now, after all of this, for the first time since he's come back to his cabana, had a whole to-do with Higgins, a drink with Higgins, and a phone call with Rick, now he suddenly discovers there's someone in his shower.
Yeah. And it's
the timeline on this is
it's very
weird.
Odd. And the way he handles her is very bizarre.
Yeah.
He gets her out of the shower.
Well, but it's Alice. It's Lieutenant Dan's sister.
Right. But she told Higgins that she was
Magnum's sister,
so
he would let her into his cabana.
And so there's a lot of weird sister jokes for the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
But he gets near her like he's going to kiss her at one point.
And then
he hucks her onto the
away.
Bed.
Yeah, it's a weird... Yeah, it's...
And then calls her sis.
Yeah.
I was like, what kind of weird-ass sexual role play are you guys doing?
It's bizarre. It's utterly bizarre. So, and then Magnum's going through Lieutenant Dan's personal effects that Alice has collected, finds the ring, the signet ring. We have another Vietnam flashback, and this is now TC's flying the chopper to come and pick up the guys on the ground, which is Magnum, Dan, Robert Loja, and the others. They're fighting off an attack. TC says, "You see them, Orville," and Rick responds, "Ha ha ha, this is where we learn that it's Orville, his name's Orville." Oh boy, that's a funny bit. And TC, he lets the squad know where the extraction point is, and then everyone runs for it, and then we come back to the present, where Magnum's left contemplating the mystery surrounding Lieutenant Dan's death, and we fade to black on Dan's signet ring, and that's the end of part one.
Wow. So good.
So we're still left on the cliffhanger of, why was Lieutenant Dan killed? Why was the cocaine involved? Everything. Why are these flashbacks happening? I'm sure Robert Loja has nothing to do with this.
why is he there?
So that's the end of that. Now, what we have, it's time now, Todd.
Oh.
For a segment I know you're familiar with and love.
Mm-hmm.
It's Magnum News Network.
Oh, I love Magnum News Network. It's where I get all my news.
So Magnum News Network. This episode of Magnum PI premiered on December 11th, 1980 on CBS. What was going on the world that week?
I don't know, Steve.
A few snippets. Jimmy Carter was president of the United States of America, signed into law a $1.6 billion superfund to be used for cleaning up chemical spills and toxic waste dumps. So, well done, government. It's a good thing we no longer have chemical spills or toxic waste dumps.
Yeah,
that great, seemed to take care of all of it.
Yeah.
Massachusetts Secretary of State Michael Connelly banned the sale of Apple computer stock, arguing that the $22 price per share was too high. And in pop culture news, Lady by Kenny Rogers was on the charts in the US.
Lady.
And Super Trooper by ABBA was in the top five in the UK.
I'm your knight in shining armor. And I love you.
So that was a Magnum News Network. It's time now to take a look at some dated shit. Or what we like to call the unwoke 80s.
It really was. Starting with wrecking that dog in the security.
I mean, that the gate. If you haven't seen the pilot of Magnum, it's alarming how fast and hard the gate closed, both sides of the gate close on the neck of this dog.
And you can tell it hurt.
And it stops him dead.
He's terrified.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt really...
Doesn't one of the bikini ladies like kick the dog at some, or push a dog around to it? Like,
yeah,
at some
point? Well, yeah.
The dogs are not treated well.
No, they're
Apollo
not.
Apollo and Zeus are not treated
no,
well.
No, they're not. And you should be careful with Dobermans. They're very dangerous.
Yeah.
If they turn on you, that's
it. Yeah, you don't want that.
Yeah, you really don't want that. What else was there in this episode that was unwoke? I feel like
the second half... I mean, aside from all
half,
of the bikini stewardess...
yeah, and we'll...
Sexualized sexuality.
It's way worse in the second part of
yeah,
the pilot.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, I would say as far as unwokeness, that's the main stuff. Yep. As far as I can
yeah, say. I mean, I think that's... Yeah, there's definitely... They pick up steam in part two.
Yeah.
But they lay the groundwork in part one.
Yeah, they're setting up
yeah.
great jokes, everybody.
All right. So that's some unwoke 80s. Fashion PI. What do you got fashion-wise?
Well, you know, I noticed, because there's a lot of club scenes, you
yeah.
know, at Rick's American Cafe and whatnot. And so you can really see the styles. And I often hear people say that the early 80s, like late 70s, early 80s, were unkind. But honestly, it didn't... The fashion didn't... wasn't jarring.
I didn't see anything too terribly outrageous.
And he was wearing shorts.
He's got short shorts,
but
they're not super short. But
they weren't as tight.
They're still pretty short.
I feel like they get tighter as the series goes
along. Maybe we'll have to keep an eye on that.
And also, because I'm constantly watching Magnum.
Yeah.
I saw a season 6 episode recently where he is wearing one of those like Michael Jackson shirts with the weird like fold over.
Oh, really?
You know what I'm talking about? It's like
yeah.
It looks ridiculous.
Okay.
So compared to this,
I found the fashions were pretty low key.
There wasn't anything crazy. There's
yeah,
again, the second part has some more egregious outfits that we'll talk about.
Let's talk about guests of note.
I think the two big ones in this half are Robert Loggia.
Oh, right. Easily the big. That's
He's
one.
The biggest one.
Yeah.
But also, I think Fritz Weaver is a person of...
But Loggia, I mean, that would be in terms of star power at the time. That
well,
would
yeah,
be like,
and he
oh,
was,
oh, great, he's on.
Yeah, and I mean, he was huge in the movies at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and then in the 80s all over the place. I mean, he was... would go on to being big and Jagged Edge. Was he in Jagged Edge or was he in... He was in one of those like
thrillers.
Maybe it wasn't Jagged Edge. I can't remember.
Well, let's not bother checking.
Who cares? I mean, I could look.
Nah,
who cares? But Robert Loggia is great.
Yeah.
He was a great actor.
No, and I'm sure it's a total red herring and he won't be involved in any nefarious plot.
It's weird that he's an extra.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Maybe he just had a couple extra afternoons on set.
Maybe he just needed a little extra income to make his SAG insurance.
I'm sure that was it.
That was probably
I'm sure that was it. Well, okay, I think that's it for this inaugural first episode of The Lads on Magnum.
I hope people enjoy listening to it as much as I did doing it.
Listening to yourself?
Listening to mostly myself. Wasn't really listening to what you were saying.
Nah, that much is clear. anyway, thank you so much for listening. Of course, you can find us on previously.tv. And next episode is going to be the second part of the premiere episode of Magnum P.I., which
called Don't Eat Snow in Hawaii.
Why won't you stop eating that
why
snow?
Why are you eating that
snow? We're in Hawaii. You guys.
That's not snow. That's a lava field.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.
Bye.